The following commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3241, or you can email radio@bnntv.org.
Hello, and welcome to Bostonian Rap. My name is Rachel Meiselman, and you are listening to me on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston. This is Boston's community radio station. So, as always, I like to just dive right on in. I have a few topics I'd like to get into. The first one is the Massachusetts Republican Party. I did say, I believe, in the last show that I wanted to talk a little bit more about the party. I want to talk more about Methadone Mile. That is an issue that very much preoccupies me. I used to live there, and I've shared that in previous shows. I lived there, around there, for a period of 6 years. And over that course of time, I saw things deteriorate in a really kind of marked fashion, and it's really astonishing to see how bad things have become. So definitely want to talk about that. I also want to turn my focus to a special election. So there is a special election that's going to be taking place in December. In the middle of December, it's the first Suffolk and Middlesex District Senate race. I'll talk about that. I'll talk about the two candidates. And if we have time, I want to get in a word about the exam schools. For those of you who listen faithfully, and I thank you so much, you know that the exam schools issue is near and dear to my heart. I am an alumna, and I am actually a second-generation alumna of the exam schools. As a female relative of mine, she attended the Girls Latin. So, you know, exam schools, what they stand for, what they represent, it's really, it's something that's very big and weighty. And as I am very fond of saying, Latin school made me. It really shaped me in a very significant way. So let's just get right on in. We don't have quite an hour, so let's get going. So the Massachusetts Republican Party. It's hard for me to speak about the Massachusetts Republican Party positively right now. My issue with the party is that there is no coherent message. And I've said that consistently. But beyond that, another thing that disturbs me about the Republican Party is that at present, we have elements. We have a faction of the Democratic Party, and they are so far out there, and they are so out of touch. And what they are proposing is so detrimental that you have a number of people who consider themselves staunch Democrats, and they're shaking their heads. They're saying, "What's going on? This isn't what I grew up with. This isn't what I know." And so this would be a time that you would expect for the Republican Party to grow in numbers. And at the very least, you would expect that this to be a time where people would be more receptive to what the Republican Party has to say. But unfortunately, under the current leadership, Chairman Lyons, Jim Lyons, who was a state representative. He's in Andover. He was a state representative, I believe, for what, 8 to 10 years? I didn't really follow him too closely. But what I saw, I wasn't necessarily a big fan of, and certainly as a state party chairman, I've been even less impressed. And I think that's because, again, there's no message. It's everything is reactive. Everything is reactive, and there's no preemptive strikes, if you will, being made. And I just don't get it. I don't get it. And, you know, I'll say another thing that really bothers me, even upsets me, is that we're in a time where there is cancel culture. And you have people who are so afraid, regardless of party affiliation, or maybe, you know, they're unenrolled, they're unaffiliated with one party or another, or with a third party. And they too, they're afraid, because the idea is that if you say the wrong thing, if you offend the wrong person, if you raise any red flags, and honestly, you know, there was a time when to offend someone, to raise a red flag, you had to do something that was actually offensive. You had to do something that most people could sit around the table and concur and say, you know what, that was uncalled for, that was unnecessary, that was insulting. But today, what is offensive, what offends, it depends upon the day of the week. It depends even seemingly, you know, what hour, you know, like it the goalposts are always moving. And so it's exhausting, actually. So you have the cancel culture. It's rampant. And I joke, but it's not very funny, because as I started to say, people are very reluctant to express themselves. And in a nation where freedom of speech is very much the cornerstone of what makes us great, that should be greatly concerning to anyone and everyone. So you have the cancel culture. People are afraid to speak freely. And so what does the Republican Party offer as an alternative? Well, if you don't express yourself the way the party chairman does, Jim Lyons, well, there doesn't seem to be room for you in the GOP tent. Now, someone might listen and say, well, you know what? I find Jim Lyons delightful. I find him very open-minded. I think that he is very much willing to sit down and listen to what you have to say. And to that, I would say, you know what? You're entitled to think what you want to think. You know, and that's what it is, freedom of speech, right? Personally, I think that it's his way or the highway. So when we have these extremes, when we have an extreme element in the Democratic Party that's making lifelong Democrats sit up and say, what's going on? What's happening? You would hope that there would be a viable alternative, but no. And I find myself very frustrated. And you know, continuing, you know, this kind of frame of thought, this idea, this train of thought, if you will, I have a big problem with how the Massachusetts Republican Party operates. So if they had messaging that was consistent, coherent, that would help anchor things more than a bit. But because they don't have it, it's just kind of, it's, they're kind of going off in all directions, and I find them jumping on headlines. And again, when you're talking about a whole political party that's doing this, or it's being run by someone who is engaging in this or who chooses to do this, that's disheartening. And as I said, it's concerning, it's disturbing. Let me give you an example. So out of the blue, Jim Lyons decided that Liz Miranda, State Representative Liz Miranda, was someone that needed to be targeted. Why? Because 10 to 11 years ago, Liz Miranda put up tweets before she took office, before she was a public servant elected official. She put up tweets that, some of them, I saw them, they were quite crude. They were quite crude. And honestly, whether you're an elected official or not, it was just, I don't know why you would articulate a thought in that manner and make it public. I don't get that. Or maybe just expressing the thought itself. You know, there were some things that she said and posted. And this was on Twitter. And I said to myself, you know, that's not a thought that needed to be made public, regardless of the language that you use to express that idea. So, you know, here you have the GOP, and they went for it. Now, it's not that she didn't deserve to be called out for those tweets, but the amount of energy that went in to zeroing in on Liz Miranda. So let me tell you what the GOP missed, the state party missed in the meantime. Liz Miranda played a big role, or at the very least, she was a big supporter. So there's no reason for me not to believe, because she is influential, that her backing did not help to a considerable or decent or estimable extent. She backed the woman who is going to be stepping in to the District 7 City Council seat, Tanya Fernandez. Okay, so she helped get Tanya Fernandez elected. And then there was another city councilor, and while this woman, while she didn't get elected, she certainly attracted a lot of attention. She was on a lot of people's radar. So she was also being pushed by Liz Miranda, Carla Montero. And, you know, I kind of sit back and I watch what the GOP does sometimes, and I say, okay, make your point about her tweets, but how much time are you going to spend on this? Because you didn't stop her from making a difference in the city council races. You're certainly not going to get her to step down, and you're certainly not going to alter any plans that she has to run for this office or that office. So besides getting her to delete those crude and offensive tweets, most of them, what did you actually gain from that whole chapter? I don't get it. Also, you have someone like Michelle Wu. Now, Michelle Wu, I'll have plenty to say about Michelle. I have had plenty to say about Michelle over the years, but it's never going to be gratuitous. It's certainly never going to be offensive, but it's going to be what I hope is just. So, in other words, if I say something negative about Michelle or something that's less than flattering, it's going to be specific, and I'm going to point to an example, several examples of maybe a particular behavior or an attitude that is reflected by these, you know, different examples, I think. And I'm going to use that to argue my point. But I'm not going to just throw out a criticism. I'm not going to just say something to be offensive. I'm not going to be a rhetorical bomb thrower. That's not what I'm interested in. And I think that with the mayoral race, I think that the Massachusetts Republican Party could have played a big role. I do. I think that, you know, the party, if it were run by someone who is really, quite frankly, a good fit for the job, I mean, we could have seen thoughtful questions put to Michelle Wu. And because they would have been coming from the state party chair, because even though the Massachusetts Republican Party, our numbers, I believe they're still under 10%, and this is for the whole of the Commonwealth, you're still talking about the chair of one of the two major American political parties. So regardless of the percentage of people who are actually registered Republicans, the chair of the Republican Party is still going to have something to say, which is going to attract attention. In fact, whatever he says is going to attract attention. And so wouldn't it have been great if Jim Lyons could have asked Michelle Wu some very pointed, fair, just questions? And see, that's the thing. You know, we talk about, well, I don't, so I shouldn't say we, but there's a lot of talk about, oh, the radical Democrats, the radical leftists. But these people, and now we actually do have people that I consider, quite frankly, on the fringes, and they've been successful in mainstreaming them, not only themselves, but the agenda that they embody. Now, these people, imagine if they had pushback. And I'm not talking about people trying to silence them, because even if I hear things that I find grossly offensive, I mean, obviously there's a limit, right? But we do have a wide berth. The freedom of speech that we all enjoy as Americans, we do have a wide berth. And so there has to be some kind of tolerance, right? So I'm not talking about silencing people that I disagree with. I'm not talking about silencing people that I may even vehemently disagree with. I'm talking about, though, a pushback and having them defend their ideas. Because I have to defend my ideas. They should have to defend their ideas, too. And so I see the Massachusetts Republican Party as ideally as a counterweight to some of what I see coming from the Democratic Party. But instead of that, you see these dime store scandals that are cropping up. You know, there's a lot of petty infighting, backbiting. And then after you see different people going at it, you know, publicly spatting, well, then all of a sudden they're friends or there's a makeup period. And it's like, well, I don't have time for this. I don't see how anybody has time for any of this. This is, you know, this is real life. And we need policies and we need ideas. And we need different ways of thinking. We desperately need that. And so to have a party chair that demands ideological purity and you know, the first and last word has to begin and end with him, and a party chair that is more interested in posturing and grandstanding than crafting a cohesive message, it's frustrating to me. I mean, I could say a lot more, and I will. But I think for now, I think that that aptly sums up what I'm feeling. It's a shame that it's all about throwing out red meat and spending an inordinate amount of time and targeting, you know, this one or that one. You know, more than anything, that's all about monetizing and promoting and encouraging outrage. You know, again, on a last note, I'll finish by talking about Liz Miranda again. All that energy, releasing a statement about tweets that went back 10 to 12 years. Okay, what did you get out of that? Like I said, it didn't stop her from playing a role, being, I don't know if I'm going to go as far as to say a kingmaker, but it, you know, she certainly played a role in the city, in several city council races, a role that benefited the candidates that she was backing. She's not going to step down because Jim Lyons released a statement. So she cleaned up her Twitter account. Okay, now what? So I'll continue to criticize the GOP because I think that more than ever, we need at least two viable parties. And we need to have that intellectual diversity, that political diversity. And we don't have that right now. We just don't. So what I'm going to do now, after like totally lambasting Lyons, I'm going to go to a quick break, let that kind of marinate. When I come back, I'm going to talk about Methadone Mile. Because as I said at the top of the show, that's really an issue that is really close to my heart because I did live around there for 6 years. And, you know, there are other reasons too, but that's certainly one of the main ones. And I'm seeing, especially with the new mayor, I'm seeing already a push to go in a certain direction, which I'll talk about right after the break. And I don't think it's beneficial to the people who are suffering there, the business owners, anyone, you know, the people who live around there. It's just not the right path to go down. But first, let's take that break.
Potential is everywhere. It's in every child and every community.
Big Brothers Big Sisters of Eastern Massachusetts works to transform communities by empowering, defending, and igniting the potential of youth across Eastern Massachusetts, ensuring every child has the support from caring adults that they need for healthy development and success in life. Big Brothers Big Sisters fosters one-to-one mentoring relationships between child and adult, helping the youth in our communities achieve their fullest potential. But at any given moment, there are hundreds of children in our region in need of a caring adult role model.
Do you have what it takes to become a defender of potential? You can learn more at massbaybigs.org.
The preceding commentary does not reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to the Boston Neighborhood Network at 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Mass. 02119, attention WBCALP 102.9 FM. If you would like to arrange a time for your own commentary, call WBCA at 617-708-3241 or email us at radio@bnntv.org.
Hello, and welcome back to Bostonian Rap. My name is Rachel Meiselman, and you are, of course, listening to me on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston. This is Boston's community radio station. So I just got through talking about my party, the Massachusetts Republican Party, and I am not at all impressed with what I see going on. I don't like the leadership because I don't think there is any. And I don't think that there is an understanding of what the purpose of the party is and the role of the chairman. And so what we have is an increasingly loud Democrat socialist faction, and we don't really have an intelligent, viable response. So that's problematic. But as I said before we went to the break, I want to talk about Method O'Mile. Now, what can I say? What can I say that I haven't already said? I remember when I ran for office last year and I went down to Method O'Mile and I spoke about the whole ecosystem. And there were people who were kind of like, what are you doing? It's not safe. It's not. But there were also people who were wondering kind of just what was I doing, just because, not even because of the safety issue, but because there hadn't really been anybody who had gone down there to speak about the whole ecosystem, about the entirety of the issue. And I just felt like, well, it was something that I had to do. I felt very much compelled to do it. And it really became a focal point in my campaign. It really did. And then it wasn't long before you saw groups form, other people go down there. There were, you know, lives. People go down there, take pictures. And I got to say, it became like a thing to do. Have you gone down to the mile? That's actually what someone said to me. And it was a complaint. So what the person said was, is that he had seen it become a thing to do, a place to go. But of course, no solutions were deriving from any of that activity. And I had to agree. I had to agree. Now, Michelle Wu, Mayor Wu, she has been pretty clear. And she, you know, she, of course, didn't have really anything to say about Method O'Mile for pretty much the entirety of her time on the city council. It wasn't an issue that she really focused upon. And during her mayoral run, she really wasn't called upon to explain what she would do, go into detail about her stance. In fact, she wasn't really called upon to go into detail about much of anything. And I will say, as kind of an aside, albeit an important one, there are those who are saying that Michelle might not have such a long honeymoon, that, you know, it won't take long before people start criticizing her or looking at her, at the very least, through a more objective lens, more objective critical lens. And to those people, I would say Michelle has been, or she has benefited from quite a long honeymoon, actually. She got along quite well with Mayor Menino. She was one of his loyal staffers. And subsequently, she was on the city council where she wasn't asked too many hard questions. So, I mean, now it's, I don't feel like she's being deprived of any kind of honeymoon period. I feel like she's been on nothing but. So it's time to ask her questions. No one's talking about asking her questions that are going to be aggressive, hostile, you know, saying things that are ultimately disrespectful to the office she holds, But she's now in a position at a time, at a pivotal time, where she's going to have to explain herself, what she's doing, and her policies now are very much going to have an impact with quite a considerable reach. So, you know, back to the subject at hand, the subject of this segment, Method O'Mile. So, Michelle, you know, has said that we can't arrest our way out of this. No, we can't. But we can't feel our way out of it either. I mean, if there's a law that's broken, there has to be some kind of accountability. Now, of course, if there is a conviction, you know, the charges, then there's a conviction, we can look at mitigating circumstances, can we not? I mean, in a court of law. But to kind of dispense with any kind of accountability and pretend that the law doesn't exist, I mean, we can't phase out the law. We can't erase law enforcement from this equation. To solve what is on Method O'Mile, it's going to take a multi-pronged approach with all the stakeholders, and that most definitely includes law enforcement. And for those who are critical of law enforcement, like Congresswoman Presley, like Mayor Wu, I would say that the law enforcement is what enables them, what has enabled them to be able to go down there when they have. And actually, Congresswoman Presley really hasn't gone down there. I mean, she made a slick video when she ran against Capuano, but she really has, you know, she was on the number one bus. She talked about how there was a major drop in life expectancy from one part of the number one bus route to another. And it's like, well, gee, Ayanna, why do you think that is? You're going through Method O'Mile. I mean, it's a pretty grim area. And people migrate and you know, so it's the situation has extended far beyond you know, this particular stretch this area, this geographical space. So, you know, certainly for Mayor Wu, who's, you know, been down there more than Congresswoman Presley, the reason why she's been able to go down there and feel or, you know, have any kind of, with any kind of security, I should say, or feel relatively safe, comparatively safe, it's because of our men and women in blue. So, you know, why would you cut them out? And they have information. They have critical information that can help you solve this multifaceted crisis. So that's already an issue that I have. That's already an issue I have, I expressed it on, you know, other episodes of Bostonian Rap on television, on the radio. I will continue to do that. But I was drawn to a recent article in the Boston Globe. It was an op-ed, and it was written by Brendan Little. And, you know, Brendan Little worked for Mayor Walsh, and he was actually the policy director for the City of Boston's Office of Recovery Service, and he was in that role for 5 years. And he talks about how he was part of, you know, I'm looking at the article, he, you know, describes how he was part of a team that he has labeled extraordinary, that greatly expanded harm reduction, outreach, and recovery support. Now, I don't want to mitigate or speaking of erasing, I don't want to erase any good that Brendan Little and his team may have done. I'm sure that they have done some good, but the fact is that Methadone Mile has never been as bad as it is now. And I will say that former acting mayor Janey did more in her last few weeks than, with all due respect to Secretary of Labor Walsh, than he seemingly did his whole time as mayor, because she actually was getting those people off the streets and into a place where they could get help. And it's actually amazing to see how much she was able to accomplish in a short time. But then it also tells me what could have been done if there would have been a different approach. And I'm trying to be diplomatic. I'm trying to be tactful here. I don't want to say that there wasn't will, but there was a very much, I would say, a different approach in place while Secretary of Labor Walsh was mayor. And I don't quite agree with everything that was done. And, you know, of course, I had some criticisms for our former acting mayor Janey as well, because the idea of moving the residents, air quotes, to a hotel in Revere, that was a horrible idea. It was incredibly disrespectful to the city of Revere to not consult with the elected officials there and not get input from the people of Revere. I mean, it was horrible. And so I did very publicly state that I actually very much stood with Revere on this issue, because, you know, of course, Revere pushed back, and rightly so. But in her last phase of her tenure, she actually, I'm not going to say she turned it around, because really what she wanted to do by putting people from Methadone Mile into a hotel in Revere, I mean, that was very wrong. But it was something to see. She does deserve some approbation for getting the tents removed and getting those people off the streets. And so I come back to the article that I read, from Brendan Little. And he said, you know, look, there is a lot of violence that goes on there, but there's also community. There's also community. And I'm going to say, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that there are many acts of kindness, as he put it in his op-ed. And I encourage people to read it and form their own opinion. But what I'm going to say is that if you abuse drugs, if you are an addict, that doesn't mean that you're not worthy of dignity. That does not mean that you're not a good person. That does not mean that you're not worthy of love. But there still has to be some accountability there. There has to be. You can't pretend that if a law is broken, well, it somehow doesn't count. And you can't pretend that if there is an addict, that his or her actions doesn't harm, I mean, obviously, loved ones and friends, but also the environment, the area in which he or she abuses. We can't pretend that that doesn't exist. I mean, I personally have gone down to Methadone Mile. There is a McDonald's there. And then you have a gas station. You can get gas. And then there's, you know, like one of those mini marts, you know, like those 7-Elevens. It's not a 7-Eleven, but it's one of those type of stores, a convenience store. And I saw a woman, and she was actually passed out, but you didn't necessarily know it. I mean, for all anyone knew, she could have been dead. And I mean, that's an extreme thing to say, but we're talking about Methadone Mile. So this woman was actually passed out, and I went over to her. Mercifully, she was still alive. And, you know, I was able to bring an officer over and you know, got her up and, you know, and got her on her way. And hopefully she was in a better state, you know, later on in the evening, in the night. But she was just lying there. And I saw two women who were supposedly there to help the people on Methadone Mile. They were there talking about, oh, goodness knows what. They were just having, a great little chit-chat. And there was a woman just a few feet away, passed out. And for all we knew, she could have been dead. I have seen people that look like the Walking Dead. I have gone past these tents, and most of them, many of them have been removed. But I've gone past some of them, and it's just, we can't pretend what's happening in there, in those tents, that is something that is wholesome, productive, sanitary. There have been reports how the place has become infested with rats, and that there have been eyewitness accounts of rats just running around and onto the bodies of slumped over addicts. In fact, this area has become so unsanitary, even with the removal of so many tents, that, and there was an article on this, and this comes from, you know, the workers, the city workers who are down there on the regular, this is their job, that the rats themselves have become diseased. I mean, so it's, I understand that there might be a sense of community, but it's not because of that that we forget that laws have been broken. And we can't whitewash really any of the horrors that have taken place. You know, in this article, Brendan Little urges us not to look away, to look, if you just look, right? And what he's trying to say is that it's not just a horror show, that there's more going on, that there's some good people there. Okay, I don't doubt it, but that's not the point. And this idea that we need to give them housing and we need to be humane and we need to, they do need housing. We do need to be humane. But being humane, and I keep on saying this, does not mean that we forget about the law. And I read through this article, And I've listened to other people who adopt, including Mayor Wu, that adopt a similar approach. I don't hear anything ever about the two elementary schools that are on Methadone Mile. What is wrong with people? Do those children not count? You step outside one of those elementary schools and there is a box, there's a red box, you can't miss it, to collect needles. What are people thinking? How is that acceptable? What about the business owners? Imagine having a business there. You have clients come in and then they come out and see that. What about the people who work for those businesses? Do they not have a right to be safe? And then how about the residents? And some of them are already starting to move. Listen, I stand with the recovery community. I have long stood with the recovery community. I would love each and every single member of Methadone Mile, resident, air quotes, of Methadone Mile to recover. But there's got to be responsibility. The law has to be part of it. Law enforcement, they've got to have a seat at the table. And if we can't arrest our way out of it, well, we can't feel our way out of it either. So again, I encourage you to read this article. You might have a different opinion, and that's fine. It was written by Brendan Little, and it's called Finding Community on the Street, and it was written on, looks like November 8th for the Boston Globe. So I want to go to another topic, but first let's take another quick break.
Crispy, blazed, toasty, faded, lit. No matter what you call it, if you're high, you're too high to drive. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Text and whatever. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
The preceding commentary does not reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to the Boston Neighborhood Network at 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Mass. 02119, attention WBCA LP 102.9 FM. If you would like to arrange a time for your own commentary, call WBCA at 617-708-3241 or email us at radio@bnntv.org.
Hello, and welcome back to Bostonian Rap. My name is Rachel Meiselman, and you are listening to me on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston. This is Boston's community radio station. So we're going to just continue to zip along. There doesn't ever seem to be enough time. I do want to get to at least one more topic. And if we have the time, I want to just say a couple words about the exam schools. But I did want to talk about, there is a special election coming up, and it is a Senate race, a state Senate race, the first Suffolk and Middlesex district. So that encompasses all of Revere, all of Winthrop, parts of Cambridge, and parts of Boston. The parts of Boston include East Boston, the North End, Chinatown. So it's a pretty diverse district. It's a very interesting, vibrant district. And so we have two candidates. Of course, we don't have any Republican candidates. So that was right there. That was my opportunity to get in another dig at the Republican Party. But you know what? They released a statement about Liz Miranda's tweets that date back 10 to 12 years. So, hey, everything's covered, right? So anyway, back to the special back to special election. So there are two candidates. There is Anthony D'Ambrosio, and he is, I actually think he is dynamite. He is a member of the Revere School Committee. He's very intelligent. He's very poised, and he has a lot of ideas, and he is, I mean, his work ethic is off the scale. The other candidate, as I said, is also a Democrat. It is Boston City Councilor Lydia Edwards, and she is currently representing East Boston and the North End and Charlestown. And a lot of people think Lydia is great. She's wonderful, and she's dynamic and vibrant and, you know, very sincere, and just she represents a new face in the politics of old. And you know what I'm going to encourage people to do is, if you are in this district, I'm going to strongly encourage you to get out and vote. Now, unfortunately, for my fellow Republicans in this district, there is no one to vote for in the preliminary election because, again, there are no Republicans. But I would still encourage you to follow the race. And if you encounter either candidate or if you want to know more about both candidates, and you should, reach out and respectfully, civilly ask questions. So here's my two cents. As I said, I think that we need as many elected officials as possible who are not married, who are not tethered to a particular group, a particular politician, a particular maybe union. And I say the last bit, even though I'm union born and fed, because my point is that we need more elected officials that are focused on the people. Not even an agenda, but the people. And so, you know, let's talk about the two candidates. You have, you know, Lydia, and, you know, she's heralded as this, you know, really great housing attorney. Well, unless I'm somehow mistaken, she's actually not. So she is, you know, obviously she's an attorney. She's a licensed attorney, public interest. And so that can actually be pretty broad. But if you look at her work record, you know, why housing might have been an issue on more than one occasion, and I expect, you know, that was the case, that wasn't really her area of specialty. That wasn't her area of specialty. And so really it's kind of weird for me, odd for me, that she's being called, you know, this great, this fierce housing advocate. It really isn't something that she specialized in. And it looks like actually her focus as an attorney has been public interest, which again, I said is very broad. And then I believe she got an LLM in taxation. So again, it's her area of expertise is not housing. But I think a lot of people say that it is because she was, of course, the deputy director of the City of Boston's Office of Housing Stability. That's what she was doing before she stepped down to run for the seat on the Boston City Council. But I just, my opinion, that particular office has been run by people. There have been several people running that office who've had a big say in how that office is run, and they don't really necessarily have the background for that position. I feel like it's been a place where people can go or the place that people, a position that people get, if they have social justice anywhere in their background, you know, or if they say that, you know, a certain amount of times, you know, and in bios that are here and there. And so it's like, oh yeah, a social justice person, that she or she would, oh, and you got a legal background, you're a licensed attorney, you're a paralegal, okay, sure, yeah, you'd be great here. And I don't necessarily agree with that, but then I wasn't the one doing the hiring, the appointing, you know, whatever. But the point is that's why she's called housing, you know, specialist, housing attorney. My thing is that I feel like Lydia belongs to a group, and it's a group of women of color that were elected to the Boston City Council over the past, like, 5 or 6 years, 8 years, 10 years. And the focus has been on them making history. The focus has been on them breaking glass ceilings. And more questions need to be asked of Lydia Edwards. What exactly has she done? What exactly does she stand for? There have been concerning stories about her using, taking advantage of the first time homeowners, home buyers program. And she's already had a home to buy a home in a city that she's never lived in. I mean, that's concerning. That's an issue. That's something, you know, Lydia should speak to that. She should speak to that, not in sound bites, but let's talk about that. She's been cited for the condition of the property that she had in this other city, and it was actually in Chelsea, which neighbors East Boston. So questions that need to be asked. And, you know, I'll be talking about this race next week, because I think that this is actually a very important one. I want to hear more, not about glass ceilings. I don't think that people have anything to prove in terms of being open-minded, progressive, forward-thinking. We need the person who's going to be the right fit. And so the other person, of course, is Anthony and D'Ambrosio. And so I encourage you to find out more about him. He's a member of the Revere City Council. The Revere School Committee. And I want to talk about this more, but unfortunately, that's all I have time for now. I'll start off the next episode. By talking about this race. And then, of course, I'll try to talk about the exam schools as well. But bye for now, and I look forward to hanging out with you next week.
The preceding commentary does not reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to the Boston Neighborhood Network at 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Mass. 02119. Attention WBCALP 102.9 FM. If you would like to arrange a time for your own commentary, call WBCA at 617-708-3241 or email us at radio@bnntv.org.